With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Fodder Farm is an off-grid homesteading farm of 6.2 hectares located in a remote valley in the Ruapehu district, which is in the heart of the North Island. This rugged landscape comes with its share of challenges, one of which is 4 hectares of pines, which is to be returned to pasture and the landscape regenerated. We were intrigued by their website, which is fodderfarm.co.nz, whereby they share their experience of developing, improving and enjoying this little piece of paradise. So we were curious to find out more. Rebecca Stewart from Fodder Farm is with us. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Paul.
Thanks for coming on. I looked up the word fodder just to make sure that I remembered what it meant properly. Food, especially dried hay or straw for cattle and other livestock. There you go.
Yep, that's one of the interpretations, yep.
Oh, what's another?
Well, we prefer to use other stuff like tree hay is something that we're working on. So we can gather trees, branches with, you know, the leaves at the high nutrition time and dry that. And that's another version of fodder.
We'll get into all of that. I know that part of the country reasonably well. I've flown over it when I used to go flying back in the day. It is rugged and, of course, driven through the obvious parts of it many times, even climbed to the top of Mount Ruapehu once as a punishment on a school camp. One of the most memorable things I've ever done, as it turned out. Anyway, how did you arrive in that part of the country for this?
We knew we needed more land, and so we started looking. And at that stage, the Ruapehu district was one of the areas where land was more affordable. We were in the Manawatū prior to moving here, and we just managed to find this property on Trade Me and had been for sale for a while, so we came and had a look and thought it fitted what we wanted, and so did our best to get it.
How long ago was that?
That was 2020.
So you've been there what? Yeah, 3, almost 4 years, perhaps. What can you do what can you do in building up a farm, the sort of farm you have in that sort of time?
I guess it's firstly depends on what you start with. For us, unfortunately, we started with a pine forest.
Oh, unfortunately.
and also it depends on where you're coming from. We're obviously coming from more of a natural processes perspective. So one of the first things I guess we sort of look at doing is not doing any more harm to the land. That didn't really fit into pine harvesting. That was one of the most damaging experiences I've ever had in my life on the land.
Why is that? Tell us why that is, Rebecca. Because I've heard pine criticized many times. Why would that have been so devastating?
Well, unfortunately, because we're a small property and in the middle of nowhere, it was really hard to get someone to come in and harvest. So the initial plan was to get them to come in during summertime, and that didn't happen. They turned up in winter, and that's the worst possible time, especially when you're in a high rainfall area. So basically what we were left with was churned up paddocks and mud and slash pushed into the ground, like you're talking a meter deep. Everything was just a horrendous mess. And then, of course, you're also left with what is sitting on the surface, all the leftover branches and, the pine needles and stumps, and everything's just like, it was really quite depressing. It was a horrible, horrible experience.
Is that, do you remove that at some point still, or do you just have to accept that that's kind of what you've got?
No, if you're going to put it back into pasture, you need to get off as much wood as possible.
Right.
And David has been doing that since the harvest happened, which I think was winter of 21, I think. we got that done. So obviously we're still, almost 3 years into the cleanup. And David's just been down the paddock just the past few days working on one of the last areas that really is covered with huge amounts of wood still.
But
if we want to get the pasture going, we need to get that wood off. We need to get the balance of the land back to growing pasture and not growing trees or woody weeds, which is what happens after the pines have gone.
Okay, so will there be animals? This might be like a dumb question. Will there be animals on this farm at all at any point, or are there already?
When we moved here with animals. We already had animals, and we brought them with us, and we just had to manage. We do have one paddock around the house, which was grass, and there was some grass around the verges of the pine paddocks. So the animals have been here the whole time, and they're actually an integral part of rebuilding the pasture, because we found one of the best ways to re-establish this pasture was to feed out locally sourced hay in the pine forest to start off with prior to the harvest. And then after the fact, we carried on doing that. So we'd spread hay and stuff around on any area that needed it. And in some areas actually repastured very fast, which was a relief.
So the livestock are a crucial part of that, are they?
Oh, yeah, because they manure it for you and trample the seed in, so the seed gets more of a footing and doesn't just get eaten by birds and stuff like that. So they build the bacteria back up in the soil, because with the trees, it's primarily fungal, and we need to get the bacterial balance up to grow good pasture. So it's all a system that works together. And we just really believe that that's the way to go to establish
your land, I think. You can see it working. I can hear it the way you're describing it, because a lot of people have said, let's say in certain sectors, that that sort of farming is destructive of the landscape or the
The
health of the landscape. You know, that we've got to do less of that sort of farming. Doesn't sound like that's right.
No, I mean, you've got the rise in regenerative farming these days, and you use your livestock to increase the fertility of your land, and overstocking obviously is not a good idea, but just making sure you find that balance in your landscape. And animals are a part of our landscape.
Yeah.
We might not have had these animals there to start off with, but they're here now and they feed us. So we utilize them the best we can, I guess, to bring back the health of our land. I mean, if I wanted to plant it in natives, that would be great. You know, we could replant a whole land in native, which many people have said to me, why aren't you replanting in natives? It's like, because natives don't feed us.
Yes,
and our whole
point.
Goal of being here is to eat.
It's funny how people don't miss that point, right?
Yeah, no, definitely.
I mean, imagine if everything was in natives and like, oh gosh, I'm hungry, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of edible natives, but you'd still be hungry.
So what sort of knowledge did you have to, you and David is your husband, right? What sort of knowledge did you have coming into this, and how long have you had it? Or did you have to sort of do a steep learning curve? Tell me.
We both got rural backgrounds, so you sort of draw on that a bit, and just life experiences. But I guess and observation is another thing that we're quite keen on. We've just spend a lot of time observing how things work. I guess in some ways it's a bit of a steep learning curve, because the scenario is different here. We knew we were going to have to bring the pines back into pasture to achieve what we want to achieve, but we didn't realize the state that we would have to try and bring it back from. So that's just the shock and horror of that. You've just got to grow from there. But it's constantly, I guess, observing what's working and doing more of that and just building on it all the time. And we're both into learning stuff. So we always, if we want to know something, we'll just research it. We'll read stuff. We'll look at stuff on YouTube is David's thing, and I'm more of a reader, so I'll read articles on Google and stuff like that. Books, I'm big into books, and we're just constantly learning. So, and that's part of the point of the Fodder Farm website, I guess, is to share what we've learnt with other people, so they can, go along and do what they want to do.
That's very generous of you, by the way, to share the knowledge. And speaking of, knowledge, what is fodder? Started off that way. You mentioned tree hay. Let's get into this now. So you can make hay out of bits of trees. Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Well, you harvest that doesn't trees. Seem like that's a bit counterintuitive to someone like me.
Yeah. It's actually traditional. Prior to, I guess, the people having a lot of fields for their hay or something like that, or in areas where it was harder to get the grass dry, they would actually harvest tree branches from fodder and forage trees and bundle them tightly. And most of these were actually stacked outside. So if you're kind of thinking along the lines of the old haystacks that you see, except these would be big bundles of branches.
Okay.
And usually they were picked at midsummer, maybe, where the nutrition was the highest. It has actually been around for a very long time.
And how do you process it without giving too much away? Don't want to take any secrets away. But how do you bundle it up? Do you just leave it to dry out? How does it work?
Yeah, I leave it in an airy place. Like I said, they used to have it outside. We actually have ours under a shed roof, but we try and keep the airflow around it so that it just basically the leaves just don't dehydrate. And because they're bundled quite closely together, the majority of the leaf stays where it was. And then come winter, we'll feed out a bundle, depending on how many we've got, probably every second day. It actually has much higher nutritional value than hay. So they don't get like huge bundles. We're still feeding out hay because it gives them that bulk as well. It's...
Right,
it's
I see. So it's like supplementary sort of mixed feed.
Yeah. So, they're little
supplements for cattle, is it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Do they like it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. You'll feed out of one bundle and then, leave them to it, come back the next day and they've cleaned it all up. And they'll chew on the little branches and stuff as well, depending on what species it is. But mahoy is a favourite. They absolutely love mahoy.
Okay.
And tree lucerne's another favourite. So those are two of our primary species that we really like.
So does it make sense then to maintain a part of that 6.2 hectares in, or maybe not pine trees, but in trees for that part of the feed?
Oh, yeah. That was where Fodder Farm came from. We initially were selling fodder trees in the Manawatū. Plants. But so planting trees is a really big part of what we do here. It's the growth in the last almost 4 years has just been great. It's just amazing. And we'll continue to plant. We'd probably plant hundreds of trees a year, I guess, because when you really come down to it, you're constantly, with a tree lucerne, they're quite short-lived.
Yeah.
So you're constantly planting, more trees and anywhere that you have the space to put the trees. And as new fences go in and you can actually plant, because we live on a ravine.
Right.
We will plant the edge of the ravine.
That sounds like vertical.
Yeah, in some places, yes.
Yeah.
Like we're talking 30-meter drop.
Wow. Okay, that's getting up for 100 feet. That's because of the volcanic and seismic nature of the land, I guess, over time. Is that why it's like that?
It's the water action, I guess, has eaten away
erosion.
These quite steep areas. So whether it was a minor fault line or whether the water just pulled out, because we're in a valley, whether the water's just pulled out through this area and eaten down.
Right.
They
won't be trying to kick you out with managed retreat at any point, will they?
Managed retreat?
Well, I think there's already thinking around slopes and what can be farmed, you know, beyond a 25 degree slope, etc. And the,
fortunately for us, most of our property is actually quite flattish.
Okay, so, all right. Yeah.
Around, the farms around us, however, are, you know, they're much more steeper than that.
Yeah. Right. Has anyone, okay, you got the website, but what do the locals think of what you're doing?
The locals. Well,
how local is local? Is it the nearest?
Yeah, well, our nearest neighbours are 2.5 k's away.
Okay, yeah.
Yep, and we're just sort of doing our own thing. And, I mean, they're there if we need them and we're there if they need them. The next neighbours are probably 7 k's away.
Yep.
The nearest farms around us, one is actually owned by a family that use it as a bee farm and hunting block, so they don't live there.
Okay.
And the other farm has actually just recently been harvested from pine trees and is currently being grazed by the farmers who live about 7 k's away. So right. That's pretty much our neighbourhood.
I see how it works, yeah. The trees, was there no opportunity to get, what is there, a carbon offset or carbon credits or something like that? Were those in?
The land's worth more to us than grass.
Yeah.
And it's just not something we would do.
Yeah. Yeah, because people are doing that, aren't they?
A lot of properties down our wider valley, like outside the main road in here, are being planted, and it's actually quite sad to see.
In pine?
Pine.
Yeah, so you're not a fan of that?
Not a fan of pine, no, definitely not, no.
Well, it just shows you that, I know I'm going off a bit of a tangent here, but you know, the arguments for saving the climate end up maybe destroying the local.
I mean, all rural communities are shrinking and, you know, for different reasons, but a lot of it also has to do with the planting of pine trees on farms. There's several farms here when you drive out of our valley that are fully planted in pine trees, and tucked in amongst them you can see an old villa. You know, I mean, I know there's rules in place now where they have to subdivide off the houses and stuff like that. But, you know, at one stage they didn't have that rule. So these houses are just rotting in these pine trees. And that's really sad to see. I hate pines. That's the nutshell of it. I really do. I don't think they should be planted in our country unless the timber is staying in our country. And
right. Yep.
If you're going down the avenue where you think you're planting these pine trees for the benefit of our landscape, oh my God, just go plant natives. Seriously, like, don't think you plant pine trees and then the natives will grow up under them. Yes, they might do to a degree, but those pine trees will squash them. Pine trees have a limited life in New Zealand. They fall over a lot. We get a lot of that in our valley. When Gabriel struck, we had horrendous winds in our valley, and the partially harvested pine forest just snapped. Like, we're talking pickup sticks. It's just a mess. Our road had 9 trees on it and several giant, massive pine tree root balls. You hear them. It's just, you know, crash, crash, crash. So
They're not really made when it counts. Not really matched too well to the environment, right?
No, and that's just that a lot of people might have learnt now where they should be planted and where they shouldn't be planted. They should never have been planted in where the area where we live. The soil is too shallow. They just uproot. They fall over. And that's just the reality of it.
When it comes to utilising basically everything you've got on the farm, so not only are you feeding livestock, you're also, trying to chemically balance the soil. You're also looking for energy. How many of the boxes are ticked by that material? The tree bits, the hay bits. There's more than just feed, right?
One of the reasons we brought this property was it was off grid already. It has gravity feed water.
Okay.
There is quite an extensive amount of trees already on the property. A lot of them are exotic deciduous, and we're very big fans of those types of trees. They're highly beneficial to your landscape. So, I mean, we
What
use
about
a
the
lot of fire.
wildlife? What about the wildlife? Birds, bees?
Oh, yeah, no, we've got so many birds here that, they like to eat a lot of our fruit. The bird life here has actually increased dramatically in the past 4 years. And heaps of insects, but we've got a bee farm right next to us, obviously, so heaps of bees, heaps of
Oh, I
bumblebees.
didn't
It's
know
just,
that. Okay.
it's a thriving ecosystem. No, I mean, that's part of what we love about it too, that high level of bird life. There is, of course, a high level of goat and deer and rabbits,
Oh, yeah. Oh,
surrounding us
rabbits.
as
Yeah.
well.
What do you do about them?
Oh, you have to control the rabbits a bit.
Yeah.
The deer and goats are mostly not on our property. They're on the farms surrounding us, so the hunters like to come in and take care of those.
And do you have to prune all day?
All day. No. No, I mean, life's pretty good, really. I mean, there is quite a lot of work, and like I said, David's got a lot of clean up still to do and a lot of fencing to do. But we just, work with the seasons and whatever needs doing. Obviously, we've just come out of preserving season, so
Oh, yeah.
the last
Okay.
peach is being done today.
Nice. The old glass jars.
Oh, yeah. No, we store a lot of food because you never know what your harvest might be next year, so you make the most of the good harvests that you have. The reality is we don't actually eat a lot of fruit or
Oh, really?
veggies, really.
Okay.
No.
So
We have quite an extension.
how many varieties have you got then?
How many of fruit trees?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. There's probably, I think at one stage I counted 100 fruit trees. A lot of them are young still. Some of them
Okay,
haven't
geez.
really started producing properly yet, but just the produce we had this year was pretty good. So,
And you sell the produce, right?
not yet. No, we might do
But
in
you
the
will.
future, but
Yeah.
you probably will.
That's the next little menu item option on the website that's to come. Maybe.
Yeah, so we probably will because while we're not organic, the food we produce is grown organically, I guess.
Do you want
So
to go to that level?
I would never bother with being certified. No.
Okay. Well, just too
We're
many
quite
hoops to
happy with
jump
what we
through.
do.
Too much admin.
Oh, yeah. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
It's not something we need. I mean, if we're going to go sell our stuff locally, we'll just say to people, look, it's grown organically, non-cert,
Yeah,
buy it or
that's
don't.
probably good
So,
enough. Yeah.
yeah.
How long do you think it's going to take before you really knock it into shape?
Yeah, it's hard to say. We always think, you'll get this job done and get this all finished, and next year there won't be all that infrastructure that you still have to work on. But then we like get some other ideas because we're good at getting ideas, and something else needs to be built, or another fence might need to go in. But I mean, I already feel like it's working quite well how it is. And once David's finished this next lot of fencing, we should be able to manage our grazing a lot better.
Rebecca Stewart, thanks.
Okay, thank you. I think we'll be, in a pretty good position, really.
Let you go pretty quick.
No, it does fly.
Yeah, when you're busy. Now, have you published a book?
I actually have three books. I have a
Three
book,
books.
and a fourth one coming out.
Oh, really? Fantastic.
So I have one at in bookstores, which is Life on Fodder Farm,
Yep.
A Journey to Self-Sufficiency. So that's just, I guess it's like just talking about our life on the land, but also sharing lots of information and recipes and projects to help other people live a more natural life on the land. So that's been quite an interesting process putting that one out.
And how's it been received? That and the other. Yeah.
I've had lots of really good feedback on that book. A lot of people say that it's really helped them, I guess, find their footing and trying to live a more natural life and stuff like that, and inspired them. So that's been really nice to hear that type of feedback. cares. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Has it been what you thought it would be?
Writing the book.
Well, no, just the whole exercise, which is that's part of, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, you sort of have these ideas of how life's going to go, but one thing that we've learnt over the years is to just go with the flow quite a bit. So we just adapt as we need to. I mean, our eldest daughter is intellectually disabled, so you know, you never know what's going to happen next. You sort of just adapt and just keep, I don't know, just take your steps and see what's around the corner of the next one. And, you know, life could throw you a curveball at any time. So
you're not wrong.
So I don't think I really have too much expectations of life now. I just, go with the flow.
Well, that's really cool. Really interesting to find out about what you've been doing. So thanks for giving us a bit of time and to tell us about Fodder Farm, 6.2 hectares in a valley, remote valley, Ruapehu district. And if people want to know more, then go to your website, fodderfarm.co.nz. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.